This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Leibel Sternbach is here, Joe McKenzie, and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Thank you for joining us on New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell, and now joining us is Sarah Holley, the Director of Public Health for Ramsey County. She's here today to share an update on where COVID-19 cases stand right now.
I think people wanted to get away from COVID, right? Everything was COVID talk. And I think that people have dropped their defenses in some ways, and we're also hearing that, you know, people getting vaccinated for COVID, those rates are also dropping. So I think as a local public health department, we want to make sure that we are getting messaging out to communities that it's still important that you stay home when you're sick, that you're up to date with your vaccine or booster shot, and that if you're experiencing, you know, something like long COVID, that you know where to get resources and help for that.
Sarah Holley, thank you so much for being with us on New Beginnings. In her position as Director of Public Health for Ramsey County, 2 years now, joining us on New Beginnings. Joining us now is the career guru, Mr. Joe McKenzie. He turns candidates into contenders through his company entitled Ripple Connects. Joe, how can people find you?
They can reach out to me at 763-438-1621 or go to my website, rippleconnects.com.
All right. We want to talk about how to stand out during the interview process. And I think about spring, things are turning green and flowers are coming up and they're really standing out. So how do you stand out now in the hiring process when the big time hiring season for 2023 is now in our rearview mirror?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of the hiring does take place in that first quarter of the year, but there will be opportunities throughout the year. And I think anytime you have an opportunity to interview, you should take steps to stand out in the interviewing process, because you want to be remembered. You want to make sure that your background is measured right for this opportunity, and you want to make sure it's a good career move for yourself. So these are some of the steps that we've talked about here in the last several years on New Beginnings, but I do think it's important for that reinforcement for just a couple of key steps to take to help you stand out when you're being interviewed.
We're talking with Joe McKenzie today about how to stand out during the interview process, especially right now. So what would be step number one, Joe McKenzie?
Well, I've never been a fan of someone just going and winging an interview without preparing. I don't care if you've got 40 years in that industry. If you're not prepared to talk about some of your significant career accomplishments in a clear, concise way, then you're not going to stand out. You're going to meander with your answers. You're not going to be on point. You might even give self-serving answers that don't help you to stand out. So first step, take inventory of your most significant career accomplishments and write them down. Make sure they're truly your career accomplishments that you're most proud of, and you're prepared to talk about them in a succinct way. So that is the first step in preparation. Don't go into an interview without knowing what your most significant career accomplishments are. And that's a step that many people overlook. They think they're going to remember it, but so many things are in play in an interview, Freddie. If you don't write them down, you may forget to talk about one of the most important things that happened in your career that they should know about.
Interesting. So that's step number one. Is there a finite number of accomplishments that an individual should put in that list as they're considering what their accomplishments are?
I think they need to look at what type of opportunity they're interviewing for and curate the specific accomplishments that are going to be most relevant to that opportunity. And that's that first step. That's a refinement part of writing them down and getting them in, you know, kind of that order for yourself that you can say, okay, this is a time that I took over a nonprofit and this is what I needed to do. And here today we're doing X plus one. That is something you want to make sure that's on your list and you're ready to talk about it.
It's interesting. I know that people are listening right now, and we've only gone to step one, but I can just hear some of our folks listening, and they're saying, boy, this is a lot of structure to standing out in an interview process. I just want to go in and talk about what I've done.
Yes, and that is oftentimes the case. But if you truly want to stand out, you need to be able to ready to talk about those. And if you're just going to make it about you in that interview, Freddie, you're really not giving the people that are wanting to fill that position enough information for you to be measured and your experience to be measured right. And that's why I think it's so important to get your thoughts in order. And that's that first step.
Get your thoughts in order. So what would step number two be in making sure that we stand out during that interview process?
I would say invest time in developing your own set of questions. And what I mean by that is don't just go to the internet and print off commonly used interview questions for the employer. I would say that you have to be comfortable asking questions so you can understand what they're looking to accomplish there. I've long talked about a career expert author, Lou Adler, who's written the book, The Essential Guide for Hiring and Getting Hired. A lot of his questions are so simple that we overlook them. We spend more time thinking of answers to questions that we're going to be asked, and we don't spend nearly enough time putting down some of the questions that you should ask the employer, the hiring team. And it could be just as simple as, what are some of the challenges associated with this job? If they're going to tell you what some of the challenges are, couldn't you carefully curate some of those similar challenges you had in another position, Freddie?
You really could. Just outline those and think about them.
Yes. So if you understand what that challenge is with that position and you've had experience with that, and if you bring that over, it's transferable from another opportunity. Now, Freddie, that's how you stand out. Now you're talking their language. Now you're entering their world of some of the challenges. And that is how you stand out. And it could be as simple as, you know, what are the actual problems that whoever takes this job will have to solve? And now we're into the problem solving area of the interview. And if they give you some of the problems that need to be solved, and once again, you carefully curate some similar experience solving those same problems, another opportunity to stand out. And all you did was tweak getting a couple questions ready for you to ask them to understand what's taking place there. That's how you stand out.
Wow. Joe McKenzie with us this weekend. We're talking about standing out in the interview process for that new career or maybe even that promotion. So you've taken inventory of your significant career accomplishments. You've talked to us about developing your own set of questions and those answers. What would step number three be?
Proactively set up time to sit down with the people that you know and trust to practice. I know that if you've had hundreds of interviews in your career, that doesn't matter. The most important interview is the one that you're going to be setting up here in the next month or so. And wow. So therefore, we need to proactively bring in the people that know and trust us, that will give us honest feedback, will give us that opportunity to talk about our significant accomplishments, to practice asking those questions. Ball players go to spring training every spring, right, Freddie?
That's right.
They refine their curveball and their swing, right?
Mm-hmm. Man, so it's important to practice.
That's right. If you haven't interviewed in a while, maybe your curveball is not where it should be, or your swing is as smooth as it could be. That's the third and final step, Freddie. Proactively set up time to have conversations with people so you can talk about your significant accomplishments in a safe setting, in a practice setting, and then ask questions. It should be natural, but that will allow you to know what you're stepping into. And the most important interview is the one that you're going to be setting up, not the one that you conducted 10 years ago.
For those who just joined us, can you tick off those three things that we need to do to stand out in the interview process?
Absolutely, Freddie. First and foremost, get your thoughts in order. Think about, reflect, and take inventory of some of your most significant accomplishments in your career that are going to be the most relatable to the position you're going to be interviewing for. Write them down. Have them ready, but also refine them. Make sure that these are the ones you truly think are some of your most successful, significant accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Number two, take time to invest in developing your own questions to ask the interviewee. You want to be curious. You want to be like a detective on TV asking questions. Tell me about some of the problems that are associated with this job that someone would have to solve. Tell me some of the challenges involved. So you got to pivot to being curious about that opportunity, because you don't want to make a move if it's not a good move, and you certainly don't want to go into an opportunity that has challenges that you can't solve, or you can't go and solve and overcome them. So pivot to developing your own set of questions. At curiosity level raises with those questions, and finally practice with someone you know that's going to give you honest feedback. It could be over a cup of coffee, Freddie. It could be over the phone. It could be over a virtual type of meeting. But practice. Be comfortable. Get out of your comfort zone talking about yourself. We don't often do it. And remember, the most important interview is the one that you're going to set up, not the one that you had 10 years ago.
That's great. Joe McKenzie with us this weekend. So let's put a bow on it. You've done all of that. You've gone through the interview process. What next?
Well, this is my own opinion. I do think when you do take the opportunity to express your gratitude for that opportunity, to learn more about this position, write a thank you note, handwritten thank you notes are always good. They're always well received. And I think that is a nice closure. Even if for some reason, Freddie, you don't feel this is the opportunity for you, they'll remember you by that handwritten, stamped thank you note that you send to them. And that's my final thought on how to stand out in the interviewing process.
He's Joe McKenzie, and if you'd like to learn more, just visit RippleConnects.com. Joe, you do some fine work at your company.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
And you're listening to New Beginnings. How about if we move to the lighter side of my desk? Research found that the brain works better on 2 cups of hot chocolate per day. Maybe that's why I feel so brilliant at Christmas time and so lost in July. And did you know that 11,000 Americans turn 50 every day? No wonder the local buffet line keeps getting longer. And it's not just humans who are getting fatter. A study found that animals are also gaining weight. The study, looking at data on the weight of 8 different species living in human environments, showed, for example, that cats and dogs have greater weight today than a couple of decades ago, as much as 13% heavier. And finally, a recent survey shows 18% of pet owners mention their pets in their wills. So accordingly, I have 3 questions for you. Number 1, is your pet in your will? Number 2, if you went today, what would you want to leave your pet? And number 3, if you had a choice, would you leave more money for the care of your pet or for the care of your spouse? Let me know. Just contact me, download the Freddie Bell Radio Show's app, and we can chat there. We've got more on the way on New Beginnings.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Label Sternbach. Label is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. On this episode, we'll be talking about some great information for you, and we'll be talking about the Fed's latest decision. Hello to Label Sternbach. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
Unbelievable. You know, there have been a lot of alarming news recently, Label, and the markets have seemed to have gotten a little crazier. As an investor, what should we be thinking, and what do we do during all this volatility?
Let's talk about what we should be thinking, and then we definitely need to address, you know, what should we be doing about all this volatility? Because, I mean, that's really the question on everyone's minds. But in order to know what to do, right, we got to understand what is happening. So, when we talk about, you know, the markets, right, it's easy to get caught up into, oh, well, it's the stocks, it's the, you know, it's the institutional players, it's, you know, there's all these numbers, and we say that, you know, we try to ascribe meaning to things, but at the end of the day, it is people making decisions. And, you know, there's rational reasons why people make decisions that they do, and there's irrational reasons. And when we look at the stock market, it has been I mean, I think this really goes back to the start of COVID. You know, COVID started and the market tanked like 30% overnight. Everyone freaked out. And then it was, okay, this isn't so bad. And people started figuring things out. But everyone had a different opinion about what the future was going to be like and what was going to become as a result of COVID and, you know, all the changes that were going to happen to our economy and the marketplaces and how people did business. And what we're really seeing is, you know, the tail end of that, of all these expectations that people had built up themselves. Nobody told them that this was going to happen, right? There was no rational basis for it. They found, you know, rational basis for it. But all of these ideas of what the future was going to hold, now that the future is happening, people are having to deal with the reality that, well, you know, their hopes and dreams aren't matching up to reality. And that's really what we're seeing in the marketplace, is in the stock market and in the economy, is things are changing. Things are changing based on expectations. Things are changing because the world has fundamentally shifted and changed as a result of COVID. And we are seeing a lot of people who became really wealthy during COVID or made a lot of money or lost a lot of money, that the wealth is shifting. And that's, you know, that's what's happening. It's a reckoning.
We're talking to Label Sternbach, and we're talking about all this news that we've seen and things being just crazy from one end of the spectrum to the other. So what does a person do, Label? How do you hold on during all this volatility?
So I think the answer is, and, you know, the answer really lies in the reason why you don't want to hold on to it, right? The fundamental thing that's making you go, well, I need to sell, or I need to go to cash, or I need to do something safer, right? The reason why you feel that, or you feel that you need to go, you know, invest more aggressive and get into, you know, this upswing, is because you fundamentally feel that you made a bad decision beforehand, right? That whatever led up to today was the wrong decision, and now you need to change it. And we need to address that question, right? We need to address the question of, are we properly allocated? Are the investments that we made sound? Or does the fact that, you know, the new reality that we're facing, does that alter our outlook for how we should be invested? And I can tell you this right now, right, that when you look at the big fund companies, you look at Vanguard and BlackRock and, you know, all of their ETFs and their mutual funds and, you know, the things that they say about how you should be invested, they've changed significantly over the last few years. But even in them changing, they haven't really altered what they're doing in their investments, right? So out of one side of their mouth, they're telling you that the future is going to be different. But the other side of their mouth, the way they're actually managing your money is still, you know, the same old as last year or 2 years ago. And that doesn't make any sense, right? Because everyone knows the future is going to be different. And we know, you know, the Fed recently said that, you know, interest rates are going to hold steady for the next 2 years, that they're going to continue to increase even, and that, you know, they're not even considering reducing interest rates, until, you know, a year or two. That outlook, right, which is a very big shift for, you know, Fed policy, right? They've been very, up until this point, they've been saying that they don't know what the future is going to be, and they're still reading their tea leaves. Well, they've read their tea leaves, and they finally come around to the fact that inflation is, you know, what it is, and our economy is changing, and that these things aren't just like, you know, transitory, and that they're going to have to hold the course. And that means investments need to change. It means the things that were working 5 years ago aren't going to be the things that work today, right? And we need to shift how we're investing and how we're allocating our capital. And we need to do it in light of the fact that, you know, for many people, we're entering into retirement, right? We're changing. We're going from working and accumulating wealth to distributing our wealth and living off of it. And that means different investments. And the investments that we're looking at are not the same investments that were even possible 5 years ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, right? 2 years ago, you came to me and you said, hey, I wanted a retirement portfolio. The options, the universe that I could have chosen from was very different than the options that I can choose from today. Now, does that mean the same options are going to be there in 3 or 5 years? Probably not. We got to work with the world that we have and the world that we expect the future to be. And it's very important to make sure that the way that we're allocated is in line with the future, not based on the past, not based on, you know, well, that this has worked for the last 20 years. Because the one thing I can tell you is the next 20 years will not look like the last 20 years.
Interesting. Lybell Sternbach talking to us about dealing with market anxiety. So what should be going on right now? Are there any studies that talk about what investors should or should not be doing, Lybell?
Well, the one study that has every year, Dalbar comes out with a study, and they're a think tank, and they come out with a report, a study that they do called Quantitative Investor Behavior. And what it says, and by the way, you can download that on our website, last year's from our website under the resources section. But it's very interesting. And it's consistently from year to year for the entire time that they have run this study, that they have done this study, they have found consistently that other than COVID, other than 2020, investors generally underperform the market and they end up making poor investment decisions. Not because they're, doing things that are stupid. It's just that the decisions that are being made, right, are based on, short-term expectations, or they're based on emotions, or they're based on these, the information that we're getting through the news and not looking at the holistic picture, right? They're not taking the long-term view. And usually there's very good reasons for why they're doing it, right? I got a client right now who, he's very adamant that he wants to be in cash. And I talked him out of being in cash, but his reason was because he's going to need money at the end of the year, right? And the fact is when we're living off of our money, when we're living off of our portfolio, we have these needs. And if we don't have a way to address those needs, then we're going to be more conservative than we should. We're going to err on the side of caution rather than risk-taking. And fundamentally, risk-taking is what allows us to grow our wealth. During our working years, we took on risks, and that's how we were able to grow. I literally just had this conversation with someone. We're going through their risk questionnaire, and they said, they're very adverse to losing more than 10% of their portfolio, but the returns they want to get consistent. They want to get 8 to 10% a year in returns. And I'm like, what you want is to recreate what you've got so far, but what you got so far was based on a risk of losing potentially 30 to 50%. Because that's the risk you're taking on your portfolio, and that's what you got rewarded for. Mm-hmm. But they weren't even aware of that. And that is, I think that fundamentally is the questions that we need to be asking, because we end up taking on risks that we're not aware of, because either we don't understand the economics of what the future looks like, or we have a skewed view of the future, or we end up being more conservative because we have immediate needs that we know and we need to address. And we didn't have a plan in place to make sure that that was protected, that that was taken care of. So when it comes to the studies, right, what is consistently found is that having a plan and sticking to your plan is the number one thing that will help you, right? That is the biggest thing that you can do, is to separate emotions from the investment decisions.
Interesting. So when you stick to that plan, that's a way that a person could minimize the ups and downs in their portfolio?
Sticking to the plan doesn't eliminate the ups and downs. What it does is, if you create your plan properly, right, you will experience the ups and downs that you're comfortable with, or you're going to be able to reassure yourself that the downs aren't going to be permanent downs, so you're going to be able to recover from them, because you understand the risks that you're taking on. You understand that, what it'll take for it to recover, and you know that no matter what, the down that you experience isn't going to upset your financial future. And that's key to having your plan, because if your plan doesn't say, this is the loss that I can experience and still recover, if you don't know what that number is, then it's gambling, right? You're just risk taking, and then everything is scary because you don't know what constitutes a catastrophic loss.
Wow, that's big. Everyone, Lybell Sternbach talking to us about dealing with market anxiety and also making sure that our headspace is okay. So how should someone diversify their portfolio to minimize the volatility and the drawdown? But you also just said that you have to know what you're dealing with, understand what your plan is at all times.
Yeah. So something that frustrates some of the people I work with is that I refuse to get into the investment conversation until we've taken care of the income conversation, right? We need to know where our income's coming from. We need to know what our bottom line is. We need to know, you know, this what's required for stability. Because if we don't have those answers first, then all the investments in the world don't matter. Right. Because if I don't know how much money you're going to be spending over the next few years, and I don't know, you know, how much money we need to make sure that we have, you know, protected and that isn't going to lose, you know, a lot of value or isn't going to lose any value. Right. Because then we just end up, you know, erring on the side of caution and putting everything into safety, which we know everyone knows is the wrong answer. Or we go to the opposite extreme and we're like, well, you know, we just throw up our hands and like, we can't deal with this overwhelming question because it is an overwhelming question. And we just treat everything the same and everything becomes invested aggressively or, you know, different shades of aggressiveness, which is just more, which is, you know, just as dangerous as being underinvested. And, you know, it's you really got to answer the question first of how much do you need? When do you need it by and mm-hmm. where are you going to take it from? And then it's OK, what's the ride that you can experience? What's the ride that you're comfortable with? Right. And investing in the market is no different than, you know, buying a car and driving it. Right. You find the car that you're comfortable with. You adjust the seat, you adjust the mirrors, you create the comfortable ride. You turn on the radio to the station you like, you set the temperature. Right. And then you press the gas. Right. But you don't floor it. You press it at a rate that you're comfortable with. And if you start to feel out of control, right, you take your foot off of the gas and you have brake pedals that you can, you know, press to slow down if you think you're going too fast.
That's a great example. We're just about out of time. I just want to know this. Are there any ways that current retirees or people who are planning for retirement can better prepare for these market ups and downs?
Yeah, 100%. So in addition to having a plan, you want to make sure that you know where your money is coming from. And then you want to know what the risks are in your portfolio. You want it to be quantified for you so that you know, okay, this is the most that I'm going to experience in the ups and downs, or this is, you know, a reasonable assumption of, you know, the type of ups and downs I can experience. And if your advisor is not having that conversation with you, then you need to find someone who's going to have that conversation with you and who, when you experience that volatility, because you will experience it, and I guarantee you, because, you know, this is just human nature, when we actually experience the real thing, we are either going to be like, oh, that's not so bad, or we're going to be, that is like way worse than I want to experience. I don't want to ever have a night like that again. I don't want to have that sleepless night. Please change my portfolio. But you need to have an advisor who you're comfortable having that conversation with and who is skillful enough to be able to dial those dials and turn back the aggressiveness, you know, or pump the brakes when is needed to create the experience and the ride that you want.
Thanks for making us feel better about all this this market up and downs label. That's all the time we have for this week. However, if you have a question you'd like for us to address on this show, just email hello@yields4u.com. So that's hello@yields4u.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi again, this is New Beginnings, and Kathy McClear joins us. Do you like the State Fair, Kathy?
I love the State Fair. I love the food. I love the fun. I love the atmosphere. It's my favorite time of the year at the Great Minnesota Get Together.
So I understand that AARP is having a big get together at the 12 days of people from around the state coming together.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a couple of ways that folks can connect with AARP out at the State Fair. We will have selfie spots all around the fairgrounds. So you can grab a map, you can join AARP Rewards, you can sync your fitness tracker, and you can earn AARP Rewards for every step that you take. That's kind of a little known fact. And folks can learn more about how to join AARP Rewards at aarp.org. We will have a photo booth. We will have a prize wheel. We will have the match game. And that is all at the AARP block party that will be located next to the Space Needle out at the Minnesota State Fair.
For those who don't know, when is the Minnesota State Fair, Kathy?
Yeah, so August 24th through September 4th, also known, as you said, as the 12 best days of summer. We encourage people to come out and engage with AARP. We have another spot that folks can join us at, and that's in the education building. And that's where all of our state office volunteers, we have dozens of volunteers that will be joining us for the state fair. You can come ask questions about Social Security, and you can test your Social Security knowledge and play Plinko. And of course, that comes with prizes.
So you've got a selfie spot, you've got a photo booth where you can strike a pose, and a prize wheel. Everybody's a winner. A match game. Tell me about the match game.
Yeah, so it's just the classic memory match game, only a digital version. And so it's all on an iPad. Attendees touch the tiles to reveal different information about AARP programs. And when you find a match, the pair lights up. And of course, there's probably a prize involved.
We're talking with Kathy McClear. She's the state director for AARP Minnesota, and they have a big presence at the Minnesota State Fair between August 24th and September 4th. And on a serious note, AARP is urging Congress to really protect your members and those around the country. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so that Plinko game, it will test your knowledge about Social Security. And it is true that if Congress does not take action in the next 10 years, they will have to cut benefits by 20%. And so that's an average of $4,000 a year for the average Social Security recipient. And so we feel it's really important for people to understand that that's your money. You've paid into it over a lifetime of hard work. And we want to make sure people understand what Social Security means to them, their friends and their neighbors, and why we need to keep it strong and protected for current and future generations.
All right. You may not have this, but how can we find you? Maybe you do. How can we find you at the Minnesota State Fair to take advantage of all these activities that you're doing during those 12 days?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two places that you can find AARP. So first is the AARP Block Party, and that's located next to the Space Needle. So most folks can find that. So right under the Space Needle, they can attend the AARP Block Party. And then head over to the Education Booth. And that's where we will have our Plinko game, as well as our information about Social Security. And you can come ask questions and talk with all of our friendly volunteers.
All right, Kathy, we look forward to seeing you at the Minnesota State Fair. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And this is New Beginnings. And I'm so excited to be talking with John Schwartz. You're wondering, who's John? Well, John is the founder and president of the Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse. John, before we get into it, let's give our listeners a chance to figure out how to get in contact with you. Is there a website or even a telephone number?
Yeah. Hey, Freddie, thank you very much for having me. And our website is www.endefa.org. Again, endefa.org. So please reach out to me. We have a contact button on there. It's great to hear from you.
The last time we got together, we were talking about two cases at the Department of Justice found involving elder abuse. And from what I'm gathering, John, you just cannot underestimate this predator's ability or their commitment to take us, to separate us from our money.
That's exactly right, Freddie. In these two cases, the first one, Peaches Sturgio, she was approximately 30 years old, or at least in her early 30s, when she started her targeting of an individual who was in his 80s. He had at least $2.8 million, and he was a Holocaust victim. So in her eyes, as a predator, this is a very good target for her to try to exploit. And she was successful at it. At the end of the day, she was able to steal the $2.8 million, left the victim without even an apartment, and she's driving around in brand new Corvettes and then brand new Suburban. So that's how these predators operate. And so, yes, that's the message, Freddie. Do not underestimate the greed and ability of these predators.
So these individuals are not necessarily just calling you up on the phone and saying, expressing how they're trying to get to separate you from your money. But in these two cases, these individuals pressed and pressed over a couple of years at the very least.
Well, that's right, Freddie. So in this first case, Sturgio and the Holocaust victim, they met on a dating website. Now, I don't know if Sturgio was on the website intentionally trolling for elderly victims, or she was just trying out the app. I don't know that. But I do know that she did find this victim on the dating app and then started grooming him over a course of years, according to the press conference from May 2017 to at least October 2021.
Well, so how can somebody really detect who these individuals are when these individuals walk into their lives with the idea of taking your money?
Well, that's the whole trick behind these predators, especially predators like Sturgio and Hampton. They're very difficult to detect, so you have to pay extra attention to these individuals. But in the case of romance scams, if they're trying to move the relationship more quickly than you're comfortable with, that's a red flag. Also, if you do meet somebody online, ask them to do a video call with you. And if they're not willing to do any type of video call with you, that's a red flag. So that's how you can detect on these romance scams. And then with Carl Hampton, he was an exterminator who came into his victim's home performing extermination methods. And at that time, he started moving that relationship. He offered to be take care of this lady, and then he moved very quickly to sign over the power of attorney and have him named on the revocable living trust and her will. So those were red flags.
So do we need to have our family members or friends act as sentries to protect ourselves, John?
Yeah, you know what, Freddie, that's probably the best way to harden the target, right? I mean, build your trusted inner circle, and if you're bringing somebody else into your life, at least have somebody in your inner circle meet these individuals and ask their opinions. Hey, what do you think about this person I met online? And, you know, listen to their honest opinion. And that's probably the safest way to protect yourself.
John, we could really go deep into this topic, but we have to stop right here. How can we gain more information from you and about the Center to Stopping Combating Elder Financial Abuse?
Yeah, so please, I encourage your listeners to go to our website, www.endefa.org. Again, that's www.endefa.org. I have 18 cases of convicted predators, and you can continue your learning there. And please reach out to me if I can help.
All right. He's John Schwartz, and you're listening to New Beginnings. It's always a joy being with you each week on New Beginnings, and today is National Chocolate Pecan Pie Day. Man, we're having our pie and eating the chocolate too. This is one food day we're celebrating by eating our dessert first. Pecan pie is a southern delight that features crisp pecans. Adding chocolate intensifies this already scrumptious dessert. Grab a fork and a plate because we're slicing up a lot of information to help you to celebrate today's food holiday. A pecan pie falls under the sugar pie category, which have a gooey, almost caramel center. Depending on the recipe, different sugars make the sweet batter for the pie. Both brown and white sugars can be used, but so can molasses. Some people use corn syrup as a common ingredient, while others use honey. Whatever your recipe, chocolate pecan pie goes well with ice cream. I'm Freddie Bell, celebrating National Chocolate Pecan Pie Day, and this is New Beginnings. As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
The the popular author Marianne Williamson said in her first and most famous book, A Return to Love, that God, the divine, speaks to us in a way we can hear. That's comforting. God gets our attention uniquely. For some of us, it's on Sunday morning in a beautiful worship service with wonderful music and focused prayer that some of us grasp that idea of the Christ incarnation, Christ within. Others explore this world of wonders in many ways. The arts, exploring nature. And there, they really get it. They get that idea. Others reach a hand out to the world, encouraging the disheartened, feeding the hungry, visiting those that are in some form of bondage, mental or imprisoned. They reach out and serve another, lifting another up, and that's how they get the idea. I tried to convey last week in the Easter lesson this idea of service, ministering, helping another. For those of us that have most of our life needs met, we're relatively comfortable. Some are extremely comfortable and blessed with many things. People that live in abundance, if you think about it, they only get this idea, they only find this joy through reaching out and helping those who don't have as much. Think about it. Their prayers, their desires, their dreams, their goals have been met. Where are they going to find joy? But in helping others discover the goodness of God. And for those of us that have limitations or lack in our life, our joy comes when someone comes to help us, to lift us up, to encourage us, a teacher, an aide, someone that helps you, and then you get it. This grand idea. I must be worth something. Carol came to my aid. Gerald thought I was worthy of help, of a little boost. As Marianne Williamson said, God speaks to us in a way that we can hear uniquely our way. Rohr goes on to describe this incarnational world view. The divine, the Christ, is permeating all. He describes it as an idea in which matter and spirit are understood to have never been separated. Rudolf Steiner said it very simply and briefly, which is kind of unusual for Rudolf Steiner. And he said, there is never matter, this material stuff, there is never matter that is not filled with spirit. And there is never spirit in isolation that is not expressing somehow in matter. Many of us have believed, God up there, we're alone down here. The Christ idea, it's all one. It's all one. Our part is to understand that. In the church, we would say it is our job to hold the faith, to believe in the unlimited possibilities that good will express in each and every situation. This view relies more, listen, on awakening than joining some spiritual community. It relies more on awakening than joining, more on seeing than obeying, more on growth in consciousness and love than on clergy, experts, morality, scriptures, or rituals. The code word that Rohr chooses for this worldview, this perspective on life, is simply Christ. And in our tradition, it is, you know, Christ within. So I invite you this week, we'll begin in a moment of silence, but play with this preposition and this proposition. Play with this idea of divinity, of God's presence, of the risen one, of the anointed, of the power, of the good. Is it located within you? Or is it your proposition, your perspective, your worldview, how you see others, how you see this world, how you see the possibilities, how you see the path before you? It is a world of wonders. So let's take a moment and turn within. I'm going to speak a very old form of this idea. It inspired our prayer for protection that we speak every Sunday, and hopefully more often than that. It was taken from the 5th century prayer attributed to St. Patrick. St. Patrick's breastplate is protection. And I'll speak it in part. I invite you to close your eyes and let this go to the very center, the very withinness of your being. Be Christ this day my strong protector against poison and wounding, through reward wide and plenty. Christ beside me, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ within me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ to the right of me, Christ to the left of me. Christ is in my lying, my sitting, my rising. Christ is heart of all who know me. Christ on tongue of all who meet me. Christ in eye of all who see me. Christ in ear of all who hear me.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
In this Outburst segment, we celebrate the power of nostalgia and the magic of those fleeting moments that define our youth. And now I'd like to share with you an excerpt from my brand new book entitled Outburst. Check out this segment. In Kansas City, Missouri, my hometown where I grew up, on sweltering summer days, the enchanting call of Big Mama, that's my grandmother, would draw my brother and me away from our backyard escapades. With wisdom as warm as her heart, she'd beckon us to the cool refuge of the freshly painted back steps leading up to the back porch. There she'd quench our thirst with ice-cold water, and sometimes would surprise us with the coldest cantaloupe slices imaginable. Each bite was an icy burst of sweetness, a treat as refreshing as the shade we lounged in. As we savored these simple delights, perched beneath the watchful gaze of towering walnut trees, the world seemed to slow down. Slices of cantaloupe, chilled to perfection, melted in our mouths like frozen drops of summer joy. Squirrels danced among the branches above, a playful reminder of the spontaneity of life. And through it all, the melodies of a Blue Jays song serenaded us, stitching the memory of this moment into the fabric of our souls. In this Outburst segment, we celebrate the power of nostalgia and the magic of those fleeting moments that define our youth. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is Outburst. For more details and to stay up with Freddie Bell, download the app Freddie Bell Radio Shows. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.